Hello everyone and welcome to the Smash Business Show. Today is Friday, April 18, 2025 and I'm Abdul Majid Awan.
And I'm Wared Ahmed and the topics that we have for you are absolutely great. Firstly, the UAE has become the 11th largest merchandise exporter in the world and Abu Dhabi investors are stepping up their presence in the UK market. Now, Dubai listed companies outperformed their Gulf peers in Q4 of 2024. Deal CEO has been spotted in Dubai with his lawyer as Rippling is struggling to serve its corporate espionage lawsuit against them. And finally, Russia and Qatar have signed a 2 billion euro investment deal.
Big news day, last day of the week. So yeah, let's quickly get into it. First story, the UAE has climbed the global trade rankings, not the local, not the Middle Eastern, the global trade rankings, becoming the 11th largest merchandise exporter in 2024. In very simple words, merchandise exporter is they've exported a lot of stuff. So according to the World Trade Organization's latest Global Trade Outlook and Statistics report, the country exported $603 billion. $603 billion worth of goods, marking a 6% year-on-year increase. That's a jump from 14th place in 2023. So now they're 11th and 3 places jump. Good. Signaling growing strength in the country's non-oil and re-export sectors.
Now, the UAE has also moved up 2 places in global import rankings, reaching 14th place worldwide. Now, imports rose to 14% year-on-year to hit $539 billion. Now, this is driven by, you know, strong domestic demand and trade facilitation policies. Now, in the services sector, the UAE maintained its position as the 13th largest commercial services exporter, with exports rising to $176 billion, up from $11 billion up from last year.
And however, services imports dipped slightly to $106 billion compared to $108 billion in 2023, just a $2 billion drop. Looking ahead, Middle East services exports are expected to slow significantly from 4.2% growth in 2024 to just 1% in 2026. But merchandise exports in the region are projected to remain steady, growing over 5% annually next 2 years. And
globally, merchandise trade is set to contract by 0.2% in 2025 after a 2.9% surge in 2024. Now, this is coming as new tariffs and trade restrictions are taking effect by Donald Trump. Now, commercial services trade is also forecast to slow, falling to 4% this year, down from 6.8% in 2024. But WTO economists predict a recovery in 2026 with global trade bouncing back across the board.
The good thing about this news is that we export so much, but it's not just exports, it's re-exports as well. So Abu Dhabi, UAE, Dubai, the whole Emirates, seven Emirates, all the ports that we have, DP World, Abu Dhabi ports, all these big giants, they're like hubs where people bring something from some country and find it as a middle spot. They store it here, so it's easier. The old cliche that it's the middle of the world, 6 hours here and six hours on the towards east and 6 hours towards west, you gain access to the whole world. So a lot of people use this as a hub. So they come, put their stuff here, and then from here, whoever wants it, if someone in the west wants it, they just deliver it there. And from the hub, if someone wants it in the east, they just deliver it there.
And you know, Majid, you know, you brought up this point of how a lot of people use it. It's not just companies, by the way. It's governments. It's governments. So basically, with a lot of the, they call them shipping companies, right? So companies that basically help you move your goods around the world. There are a lot of companies here that do that, that are extremely successful. And they also get clients, you know, from U.S. governments that, you know, they need their things exported. But you know what, the outlier with all of this is that, you know, if you work with a company that you know their goods, you know, you're, for example, I don't know, you're transporting Baby Johnson, that's fine. But then when it's a government that's working with you, you know that you don't actually have the right to know what you're shipping. You don't have, this is because, a thing, by the way. If you're a shipping company and you work with a government, you work with say, I don't know, the United States, they have a clause and you don't actually know what you're moving around. And yeah. But you know what the added advantage of it is that if you're a shipping company and you're shipping something for a government, because it's a government, you can charge them like such high prices and they don't care whatsoever. They're not going to bargain with you. Yeah. They just want it shipped. Yeah. They'll pay whatever price that you want, but that's almost scary. Like, what am I transporting?
No, the thing is that, see, whenever these contracts are signed, obviously there's a non-disclosure of items. I've worked in the shipping industry and on the PR and comms side. There's so many forms. There's literally companies who just help you fill forms. So there's companies set up for that. There's like 4 or 5 step procedures. For example, you want to export shirts. You pack up the shirts, make them manufacture and whatever. Now you want to send them to America. So you'll first of all find a cargo company which will take it. And then you'll find an agent in between you and the shipping company. Mm. So that agent will fill up all the paperwork that is necessary so you don't miss anything because you don't know. You only know how to make shirts. And then that company will fill up all the forms for you. They have a very interesting name. But yes, they will do all the paperwork. They'll help you with it. They'll charge a small amount. Then the shipping company also gives them some percentage. So this middleman also earns. Then the shipping company eventually will take it wherever you want it. It goes there, lands. There's again paperwork. Paperwork checked, paperwork done that, oh, this has arrived, blah, blah, blah. And then eventually they go to hubs and from there they're exported. So it's a very long process. It's a very interesting process, by the way. If you get time, we'll try to do some infographic on it. But it's very interesting,
You brought up someone that's really important in this world, DP World. So, yesterday we published this video by the CEO of DP World. Do you
Sultan
remember
Sultan Ahmed bin Sulaim.
Okay, yeah.
Love the guy, so remember
he's great. And so basically he was saying something at the World Government Summit that just took place in February.
Yeah.
And what he said, it now that we look back at it in hindsight, that was prophecy. He basically said that President Donald Trump, he does not believe in free trade. He believes in fair trade. And I think putting that term out to people of free trade, I mean, that was so interesting because he said that as a president, he's going to basically release rules that will make people come and take a seat with him and actually argue with him and come to a fair deal. Because in the end of the day, he wants fair trade and not free trade. And, you know, I was looking at the comments section, Majid, and, you know, a lot of people were like, no, he just wants to make people go poor. He wants to instigate a recession. But what we've seen from the reciprocal tariffs is that a lot of countries have actually shown that they're open to having discussions with the United States. That's extremely interesting because of the fact of when you sit there and you think about it, I agree with him.
Yeah,
I completely agree with the CEO of DP World.
Some countries, what Trump did was fine because he was right that, we do so much for them, but they don't do it. But there's so many other countries. For example, the example of Bangladesh was the most important. I think Rich also talked about it to us, that Bangladesh exports so much stuff to US and there's such a big buildup of money that they owe US. So when it was calculated, it became 40% and Bangladesh was like, we export a lot of stuff to you and you don't like export stuff to us. So we will always have a trade deficit. It's like, I sent $1 billion of stuff, but I'm paying in small amounts. So I will still have trade deficit. The problem was they didn't calculate that. They just said, okay, this is the trade surplus and blah, 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 and 40% slap. But Bangladesh, a lot of countries, Bangladesh, Nepal, Vietnam, all these countries, they produce so much stuff that goes into the US. And very interesting videos coming out on a TikTok. I saw one of them and it made very good sense. The guy was sitting in the room and he was like, in my Chinese house, let me show you the US products that I have. And then he paused for 3 seconds and was like, I don't have any US products in my home. And then he looked at the camera, he was like, how many US products do you have in your home? So that's the idea that Chinese people, Vietnamese people, they don't US products. They just build them and then they export it to the US. Mm. So a lot of people have like offshore productions, manufacturing, just because cheap labor, cheap cost of electricity, cheap everything, cheap services industry. So his Trump tariffs, some places, they make sense. The 70 countries that came to him, for them, it made sense. That there, Trump was right that he wants fair trade. But with some countries, he just randomly threw stuff at them. And they're still thinking about what to do. They don't know how to come to the table with him because they're not in a position. It's the poorer countries, to be honest, very specifically. Yesterday, I was reading a statement from UN envoy. There's this very big event in UN happening related to trade. That is why this WTO report also came out. She said, she was a woman, she said that the poorer countries shouldn't be tariffed at all because they're doing the bulk of the work for you. They make the product at $1, which you sell at $100. So you shouldn't be tariffing them. So yeah, the blanket tariff policy was wrong. But with some countries, I agree with DP World CEO that he's right, that he wants fair trade. And to be honest, out of 70 countries, it's majorly European countries.
You know, at the same time, I something that I really want to discuss is I feel that the prejudice that is directed towards China from many Western people, from many Americans, is I think that it's completely wrong.
Yeah. And you know, they don't care. That's the funny part.
I think it's I remember I saw a video. I saw a video of the president of China, and he was saying that you know we don't care. We only focus on ourselves. You know, why would we care? We only work on ourselves.
In the position of giving a statement in China has come out and clearly said we don't care. Do whatever you want.
Of course. No, but it's like I saw the video of, you know, Kevin O'Leary, known as Mr. Wonderful on Shark Tank USA. And, you know, he actually got the Emirati citizenship, by the way. So technically, he's an Emirati. And he said that, you know, I work with China and I've done business with China. And I think that they're completely unfair and that, you know, they make copycats. And I think that, you know, the U.S. should apply 400% tariffs to them. And I think this kind of behavior, it's completely, I think that it's completely motivated out of prejudice.
Yeah.
Because I've noticed something, Majid, with a lot of products, where notice how people like light up when you tell them, oh my God, I got that from the U.S. When you hear, oh, I got something from China, immediately, what goes through your mind?
Yeah, it's a cheap product, like,
exactly,
low quality, blah, blah, blah.
Connotations of fake, copy, cheap product, not good enough. But then when you hear of something from the US, you're like, oh my God, this is a special good. This is godly. This is everything. I need this. And this is because of the propaganda that for the longest time, you know, is being pushed at us. That is exactly what it is. But I am very proud to say that Sudanese people caught up with it really quickly. Because I remember in Sudan, no, seriously, you'd be surprised at the amount of people that Chinese people you'd find in Sudan. Every single year when I travel to Sudan, the entire airplane, there are a lot of Chinese people doing business.
Same with Pakistan. Same with a lot of underdeveloped countries.
Doing business in Sudan. And I remember there was this trend, Majid, of a lot of the wealthy people in Sudan, when they would build big houses, guess where they go to buy everything? They'd go to China. Yeah. No, seriously, they'd get on their flights, they'd actually go to China. They weren't even ordering it online. And at that time, for me, I found that really strange. Like, why are you going to China? Like, what are you doing there? And it's like China is truly, you know, the best way to put this is it's gold. Yeah. The stuff that you can find there at the prices that you can find there, if anything, I don't think they're ripping off people. They're letting middle class people, they're letting lower class people have things that they would never have in a place like America. I think that's what it is.
See, with people like Kevin O'Leary, who actually the main word that he used in the video was IP, IP, IP. The thing is that if you make a product and if it's $400, not everyone can afford it, right? With China, the thing is, they see a new technology, they see a new product, and they make a not a cheap version, but a lower quality, but same usefulness. Same usefulness, lower quality, and they'll sell it to you for $4. So even if you buy that product like multiple times, like throughout every 2-3 years, it still won't cost you $400. That's the problem. That's not a problem. That's very smart of China. The very biggest example, DeepSeek, OpenAI, Meta, all these people, giants, billion-trillion-dollar giants, they built AIs. They did it for $6 billion, DeepSeek.
Yeah, ChatGPT.
So they built DeepSeek with $6 billion of investment. That is what China is actually for you. They have so much expertise in literally everything that you throw a product at them and say that this is $400 and they'll be like, we can make a cheaper copy, like same product, same usefulness, different name, but we'll make it for $4. So that's the kind of expertise they have. the people with IPs have a problem with that because then they can't sell their product, which actually cost them like $10 to build and $400 just because they slapped a logo on it.
Imagine just the numbers were just wrong there. So basically DeepSeek, it was developed with a budget of approximately $5.5
million. Million or billion?
$5.5 million.
Oh my God.
Million dollars. That's why it's really impressive. Yeah. And then with, so we can say $6 million.
Yeah.
But then with ChatGPT, OpenAI invested over $100 million in developing GPT-4, and that's just that.
Yeah.
He's
fundraising every like 6 months. Recently he got fundraised. He's fundraised in the past like $40 billion, $50 billion. He's just fundraising every year. And these guys, they're like, okay, no problem, just $6 million, that's it.
But
so yeah, you have to understand, they make everything efficiently, very cheaply. You can have the same product with a different Chinese name and use it. Mm. So it's a long conversation, but the end result is he was fair. Trump was fair with some of them. That is why those people came to the table with him like, oh, please, let's talk about it. Because they thought, they knew that they were wrong. And 70, out of the 70 countries, most of them are European. So, yeah, you remember we talked about the Europe-Qatar problem as well. There's a lot of things that Europe is not doing right now.
Speaking of Europe, so basically Abu Dhabi investors are actually stepping up their presence in the UK market following a period of strained relations between the two capitals. Now, tensions had escalated after the previous UK government pushed back on the Abu Dhabi-backed Redbird iMine deal to acquire the Telegraph newspaper. Now, in the months since, the Abu Dhabi Investment Authority has exited several UK assets, including stakes in Thames Water and Liverpool One Shopping Centre.
And now the investment tide appears to be turning again. Abu Dhabi Sovereign Wealth Fund Mubadala has agreed to acquire a $600 million minority stake in UK-based Nord Anglia Education. The deal is part of a $14.5 billion buyout led by Swedish private equity firm EQT and includes Dubai Holding as a co-investor. This move highlights a renewed Emirati appetite for UK-based education and infrastructure assets.
Now, Nord Anglia is a global operator of premium private schools with over 80 campuses in 33 countries, including four in the UAE. Now, its local portfolio includes the British International School Abu Dhabi and the Swiss International Scientific School in Dubai. Interestingly, ADIA had also shown interest in the education group last year.
In a separate deal, Taqa Transmission, Taqa, I think, means power in Arabic. Taqa Transmission, Taqa something.
Does not mean power, but continue.
What does Taqa mean?
Taqa.
Taqa. There's the toy, alif, and kaf, and te. In Urdu, it means power. Taqa. Hmm. So I think it has some same.
Wait, Taqa.
Yes.
Taqa means energy.
Energy.
Taqa.
In Urdu, it means power. So yeah, I was like, it means something. So yeah, in a separate deal, Taqa Transmission is making its first European move by acquiring UK-based Transmission Investment, or TI. TI is one of the UK's largest developers and operators of offshore electricity transmission, known as OFTO assets. While the transaction value was not disclosed, it gives Taqa access to a £3 billion portfolio across 11 operational projects.
The acquisition actually also gives Taqa a stake in the development of future interconnectors between the UK, France, and Northern Ireland, now strengthening its footprint in the renewable energy sector. The founder, TI's founder, Chris Veal, will remain in charge of the company's post-acquisition.
The shift in investment momentum comes as UK Prime Minister Keir Starmer works to rebuild ties with the Gulf. In December last year, Starmer visited Abu Dhabi and met with Mubadala officials aiming to attract foreign investment into UK infrastructure and energy. All signs point to a warming relationship and a new chapter in UK-UAE economic cooperation. It's not surprising, the UK Prime Minister coming here and asking us, UAE, Abu Dhabi, to invest in their country. Everyone wants the money here, right? In some way, investment form, or they're coming here as asset managers and trying to manage the assets.
But see, with the UK magic, the Middle East, it has really deep ties with the UK. Now, if you take a look at the UK at some point, with Heathrow Airport first, it was, I remember, it was owned by this very wealthy Egyptian family. I
don't remember the
let
name.
Let me search up the name.
Yeah. I think, but yes, Heathrow and a lot
the
of
Fayed family.
Fayed
yes,
family.
The Fayed family. You know, one of their, you know, their famous son, Dudi Fayed, who was supposedly dating Princess Diana.
Yeah.
But, you know, the Fayed family, they had stakes in Heathrow Airport. And then, who did they pass it along to? They pass it to the Qatari royal family. And, you know, we see how they own a lot of stakes in a lot of these football clubs in the UK.
Yeah.
And by the way, they have these royals, they have castles there. The real estate, you know, the real estate in the UK, they've invested a lot into it over the years. Because obviously, listen, the real estate sector right now in the Gulf, it's booming. But, you know, 10 years ago, the options weren't always there. But the money was there, and so they invested into the UK. So I don't see this as a surprise whatsoever, Majid. It's also their, like, Emiratis love going to London.
Yeah.
That is their spot. That really is their spot.
Summer spot.
Not even. They stay for, like, months, by
oh,
the way.
Nice.
Like, not even a week, not even 2 weeks, for, like, 2 months. Just, like, go there and stay. And it makes absolute sense.
I think it's the point of being able to afford it. UK is expensive, I've heard. One of my friends studied in, what's the name, Middlesex. And she was like, it's hell expensive to just, like, have a room or a couch space just to study in the center of London or somewhere which is important in the UK. But yeah, moving from Abu Dhabi to the neighbors, Dubai listed companies outperformed their Gulf peers in the final quarter of 2024, posting a 20.1% year-on-year jump in net income to $6.7 billion, according to Camco Invest's latest GC corporate earnings report. The growth was powered by very interesting sectors. First of all, banking. Second, everyone would guess it, real estate and utilities, which together contributed more than 86% of the total earnings out of the $6.7 billion.
Now, Dubai's banking sector saw income rise 12.2% to $2.9 billion, led by Emirates NBD, which reported full-year profits of $6.3 billion. Now, Mashreq followed with $2.4 billion, and Dubai Islamic Bank reported $2.2 billion, up nearly 17% year-on-year. Now, real estate also delivered, with sector earnings rising almost 20%. Now, this is largely thanks to Ahmar, which is founded by Mohammed Al-Abbar, posted a 16.2% increase in net income to $3.7 billion.
In contrast, Abu Dhabi listed firms saw profits fall by 21.6% in Q4 to $9.4 billion, one of the steepest quarterly declines in the region. The drop was driven by a 34% fall in energy sector earnings, which is oil and gas. Still, ADNOC Drilling and ADNOC Gas closed the year strong, with the latter, which is ADNOC Gas, recording $5 billion USD in profit.
Now, Abu Dhabi's banking sector provided some sort of relief, growing nearly 11% in Q4, with First Abu Dhabi Bank posting full-year profits of $4.6 billion. Now, for the full year, Dubai's net income stood at $25.4 billion, up 16%, while Abu Dhabi came in at $36.2 billion, down 7.1% year-on-year.
Yeah, so Dubai is doing really great. The corporations here are doing really great. The real estate, banking, and utilities, mainly Diva, etc., are doing really great.
They're doing great. And
It's a good time to open an office or start working in Dubai.
It's a good time to open an office, and a lot of people are coming to Dubai. And we've seen this with how DL CEO has been spotted in Dubai as Rippling is struggling to serve their corporate espionage lawsuit.
And the legal battle between global HR tech rivals Rippling and DL has taken a sweet twist, weird twist, interesting twist, with Deal CEO Alex Bouaziz and legal counsel Asif Malik now reportedly in Dubai, complicating efforts to serve them legal documents. According to internal correspondent, which was cited by TechCrunch, San Francisco-based Rippling is struggling to serve a lawsuit filed in Ireland that accuses Deal of corporate espionage and data theft.
Now, Deal, valued at $12 million, operates from its UAE office in Sheikh Rashid Tower in Dubai. Now, the lawsuit also names Deal CFO Felipe Bouaziz and lawyer Asif Malik. Now, Rippling CEO Parker Conrad posted on X, claiming the lawsuit was filed to address what he called misconduct in the industry that has no room to take place. Now, Rippling, also a major HR platform, was valued at $13.5 billion in 2023, Majid.
Yeah, and Deal CEO Alex Bouaziz, a Paris-born Israeli entrepreneur, co-founded Deal after stints at Technion and MIT. He's also a founding partner at Sirona Ventures, a global venture capitalist firm with $45 billion in assets. Bouaziz previously co-founded the Tel Aviv Israel-based video startup LifeSlice and has built Deal into a leading player in global HR.
Now, the Middle East has emerged as, you know, this hotspot for HR tech innovation, and we see this in Dubai-based Remote Pass, which has been founded by Kamal Raghad, which supports over 6,000 global businesses. And I think this one's a really iconic one, Bayzat, which has been founded by Palestinian entrepreneur Talal Beya, serving 10,000 clients across the region. Now, as the Deal Rippling dispute unfolds, all eyes are on how the legal proceedings will progress, especially with key figures now operating from Dubai.
And the whole case is very interesting that Deal basically planted a person in Rippling, and Rippling CEO, he worked very closely with that
allegedly
person.
Reportedly.
No. According to the lawsuit, this happened. So according to the lawsuit, it is not reported by any firm. It's according to the lawsuit. The guy was very closely working with Rippling CEO. And there's all the accusations by Rippling against Deal are that guy, when asked in questions, he ran to the bathroom, deleted everything from his phone, the recordings of the meetings and all the contacts and everything.
According to the lawsuit.
Yeah, according to the lawsuit. And this all happened. And it's a very, really interesting case, but it wasn't like related to Middle East. But now, since we found an angle, it's very interesting to see how things are working
in the
world.
See, it is related to the Middle East, though, because the Deal CEO, he's an Israeli citizen. He's not just Israeli. He lived in Tel Aviv. He's the founding partner of Sonora. Sonora Ventures, and that's one of the big, largest VCs in Israel.
$45 billion. I read the number and I was like, okay, that's a big number. But corporate espionage is one of the very interesting things that happens in the corporate world, and it's not normal. It's not like abnormal that it happened here as well. There's like hundreds
allegedly
of cases. No, it happened. According to the lawsuit, it happened. Let's see when the result comes out. But it shows that these guys are here and there. They're trying to serve them papers. Let's see how everything goes. But the most interesting thing is that you go and try to find movies. There's a lot of movies on corporate espionage as well. And then there's a lot of cases. Just go find this case and you'll be very interested.
For anyone who does something like that, like, why do you think you're not going to get caught? Yeah. And I think, you know, something
everyone
really
thinks they're smart.
Magic.
That's the problem.
You know what
problem
was something really interesting that was said in the case that I just found it so interesting. It's a fact that basically the company found that the accused employee, that basically what they built their entire case on was Slack. Slack's memory and Slack's messages. If you know Slack, it's basically this platform that a lot of companies use to communicate on different channels.
Yeah.
It was seriously really good. Click is also very good. But basically, what they found on Slack is that the employee, they kept searching up the company's name. They kept searching it up. They found that on the search button, they just kept searching the company's name. It's not like as if I've been requested to do a news story, Majid, and then I go on the channels and I try to search for it to find the link. They just kept searching the company's name.
Yeah.
And basically, if you keep searching up the company's name, what is that going to do? All the company's plans, all the company's strategies, projects are going to come up because obviously when whoever it is, whatever top management it is, when they're discussing like aims and goals, they're going to be like, the company, XYZ. Yeah. So I found it interesting that they started off with that.
In this case, especially what was the focus of the search was customer data, because again, both of them work in the same industry. So they were trying to see which customers are working.
Both equally successful.
Yeah, so both equally successful, yes.
Yeah.
But according to the lawsuit, Rippling said that Deal was trying to get their customer data so they could convert them. So yeah, that's also happening. Just reminded me of one corporate espionage movie. It's very mythical fiction, but Inception. If you haven't seen it, Inception is where they try to steal an idea from this guy's mind. It's kind of like corporate espionage movie. That's the one of the like top examples which
they
came
steal
to
it
my
from
mind.
His mind.
Yeah, so Inception is about these people. There's a group who can go into people's dreams, and so their theory is that people get their ideas from their dreams, or at least whatever idea they have, you have it in your subconscious, and your subconscious is dreams. So they go and they steal or just try to find out that idea, or at least erase an idea. So yeah, it's both ways, trying to erase
honestly
an idea.
Honestly, Majid, yeah. You know what I believe with
like,
these things?
Closest I can get to a corporate espionage movie
no,
example.
Like, seriously, you know what I believe about these things? Mm. I really do think that, you know, when you step into any company and you're signing a contract.
Yeah.
I feel like with some people, a contract is just paper.
Yeah.
But no, it's not just paper. You're signing a contract. I think that being ethical is something important, and it signals to the kind of human being that you are.
Yeah.
It really
There's
does.
There's moral and obligations when you sign a contract. Obviously, if you're not caught, you can do whatever you want. But there is a moral obligation, an ethical obligation
look,
to yourself.
I truly, no, and that's the issue. And
yeah.
I think, look, in the corporate workplace,
moral obligation.
I'll tell you where I'm going with this. I think that in the corporate place, yes, of course, you know, back yourself, stand up for yourself.
Yeah.
But there is never any other reason that you need to walk over other people.
Oh, yeah.
There is, and I think that with a lot of people that they're always constantly so afraid about their own destiny, about their own future, about
yeah.
where they stand, that they almost kind of, I wouldn't call it espionage. But
yeah,
I would call
espionage.
It's not espionage, but there's a word for it. It's kind of like reputational damage. You know, I read this journal, Majid, and basically what it was saying is that people are more likely to believe what they hear about you from somebody else more than actually the truth. Because when they actually hear something bad, they're, to them, you know why people pick up on that kind of gossip?
Yeah.
It's because of the fact that to them, then they see you as a threat. You know, this is something that I don't want to work with. And I think that in the workplace, there is always a sense of injustice. And I think it's with people always thinking too much of themselves, and that it's always about, I need to save me. But no, you just need to have a moral obligation. I think that's what it is.
What you're saying is it comes down to companies and the corporate culture, and eventually the longer, bigger picture is capitalism, that every man for himself has become such a norm in corporates that everyone is afraid of their position. If the way you build a company culture, it's not table tennis tables and it's not PlayStations and it's not like, oh, we have great food or we have this and that. Actually, what I believe, if I someday build a company, and hopefully I do when I'm 50 or 60, whenever I retire, but my company culture, what my idea is, after reading like so many books on it, the main idea that I get is that you should have people, first of all, hire people that are smarter than you, first of all. So you don't have to be smart for them every day. That's the first thing. Second would be, give them the security. Be vocal about it. Go talk to them and say that, this is your role, this is your KPI, or whatever you want to set. There's some new ideas as well. But whatever you set the goal for them, just tell them, this is the goal. Even if you achieve 70 or 80% of it, we're fine, don't worry. And even if you underperform, this is the time period that we'll give you. It's more about communication. So the more you communicate with your team, the safer they feel, the more they'll work collaboratively. The idea here is that everyone tries to save himself or herself or themselves. Even groups work together sometimes. But they try to save themselves because they're always in the fear of being laid off or let go because they're not doing enough. So it all comes down to the company culture. If you give every person security, communicate with them that this is your role, you're doing good, you're at 60%, we want you to improve, go to 70% because we believe you can do it because we hired you in the first place. You give them that assurity, and eventually they will feel safe that, yeah, see, they're giving me 3 months to go from 60% to 70%. Mm-hmm. Then, oh, 3 more months to go 70 to 75. Because, again, the upper race is always harder. We're at nearly 90,000 followers. That is why this idea is coming to my mind. I think the next 10,000 is going to be very difficult on Instagram.
I always think with employees, you have to give them that like benefit of discernment. Because I feel like often what happens is, whether it's a head, whatever employee that it is, you know, they hear something about somebody else and they just immediately make an impression. And I just think that that's so wrong.
Yeah, that's
that's so wrong, because some people say certain things because, you know, they're motivated out of that line that you just said, that every man is for himself. And
every woman also.
And look, listen, I mean mankind. So
yeah.
Not thinking
humankind.
Of it like, I'm not thinking of it like that. So yes, every man should be for himself, but you really don't need to step over other people to get to where you need.
See, again, comes back to company culture.
That.
And eventually capitalism, that the strongest person in the environment will survive. So if you're not strong, some people go to the toxic level of becoming, like, if I'm not going up, I'll pull your leg and bring you down. So that is toxic, I understand. It's very prevalent. That is why you see so many corporate coaches, you see the biggest firms in the world facing all these issues, where one guy who is the best at their work, they will leave just because they don't get the good environment they want to work in. And just some examples quickly, sorry, we went somewhere else. Real-life corporate espionage cases. Waymo versus Uber is one of the examples. So Anthony Lewandowski, a former Google engineer, allegedly stole thousands of confidential files about self-driving cars before founding his own company, Waymo. So he stole a lot of those ideas from Uber. Uber did that. Waymo sued Uber for trade secret theft. Uber settled for $245 million. So Uber had to settle. Coca-Cola employee... Uber basically Anthony Lewandowski, the Uber guy, former Google engineer, he stole secrets. So Waymo put a case on Uber and Uber settled at $245 million.
This is so disheartening.
Here's Coca-Cola and Pepsi.
Because Uber is still one of the most successful companies in the world.
So Coca-Cola secretary tried to sell confidential product plans and samples to Pepsi for $1.5 million in 2006. Pepsi snitched. They informed Coca-Cola and FBI. Very nice from Pepsi to do that. That they didn't take the trade secrets and they're like, no. Fair policy. We'll develop our own product. We don't want to steal Coke's idea. Renault spy scandal, if I see any big name. Tesla internal sabotage claim. Elon Musk emailed a staff accusing an employee of sabotaging Tesla's manufacturing systems and leaking data to outsiders. Apparently, his motive, according to Musk, he felt overlooked for a promotion. So he did that. So yeah, these things happen. A lot of these things happen. These are just like the three or four cases.
And to be honest with you, I have empathy for these people. Yeah. You know, I'm hearing these stories, Majid, and I feel no judgment whatsoever towards them. I'm not saying I would do such a thing. I would not. I would not do such a thing. But it's just more of the fact is, you know, employees see their colleagues and their founder more so than they see their families. I mean, come on. We spend like 8 to 10 hours here.
Every day,
So if you're not doing right by someone and recognizing their efforts, trust me, people will leave you.
Yeah.
All people need sometimes is like a thank you. I recognize your effort. I acknowledge what you're doing and I appreciate you. That's all that people need. No, seriously,
There's two kinds of also managers. One who don't want to say thank you because they're like, we pay you for the job. You're doing the job. We don't need to say thank you to you. But yeah, there's the good ones as well who will come and appreciate you. Even if you do the bare minimum, they will do it.
Okay, you're paying someone, but why do you need them to work extra hours for you to give them that money? I find that very unclassy, by the way.
Then don't do it.
I'm not saying don't do the work.
Again, two options. Leave the job or stay and just say I'm not going.
I'm not saying don't do the job. I'm saying that it's why do you like really need to see someone struggle for you to pay them?
No.
Wait, I just don't understand that sometimes.
It's very clear. So the first point, if someone is forcing you to do that, if your country, if your place has laws about it, I think do that. Or worst case scenario, find something better to do, find a better environment. Always run away from it. I've worked at one of the companies, I won't name them, I don't want to name them. But yeah, you run away. You run away, maybe take a pay cut, maybe do whatever you want, but run away and find a good environment to work in.
You make it sound like you're a victim. Why are you
I'm
running?
Not a victim. I'm
you're
just saying
running.
That I've
not even leave.
I've experienced
you
that.
Run away.
I've experienced the best of environments. I worked for a company for nearly 12 years, so best experience. Never wanted to run away from there. If I would have been in Pakistan, I would have worked for the same company for the rest of my life. So I've seen that, and then I saw a company which, after like first month, I was like, I have to run away. So experience teaches you that, oh, you need to find a good environment to work in where you think you can grow.
You do. Thankfully, environments are important.
I think praise to Lord that I'm at a place where I think I will stay more than 10 years again.
That's really nice magic.
Last story. Just quickly, Russia and Qatar have expanded their economic cooperation with a new €2 billion investment agreement, and it was signed during a high-level meeting in Moscow between President Vladimir Putin and Qatari Emir Sheikh Tamim bin Hamad Al Thani. Each country will contribute $1 billion or USD $1.4 billion to boost their existing joint investment platform.
This deal is an expansion of a $4 billion joint venture the two nations had actually launched back in 2014. Now, with this entire story, Majid, what I find really interesting is the way that different Gulf leaders are, you know, they're, what's the word? They're basically attracted to different Western leaders.
Yeah.
That's the best way that I could possibly say this. You know, what I've seen with Saudi and the UAE, that they work a lot with the United States.
Yeah.
They work a lot with the United States. Recently, His Highness Sheikh Tahnoon, the Abu Dhabi royal, he was in Washington in the USA, and you know, they signed a $1.4 trillion investment deal between the UAE and America, and it's meant to stretch between 10 years. And coming up, Trump is, according to Reuters, going to visit Saudi Arabia to sign a $1 trillion investment deal. So for me, I find that the difference very interesting. You know, you have Qatar, it's working with Russia, and then you have Saudi and the UAE more so working with the United States.
No, but actually Saudi is also working with Russia because recently, you know, the recent prisoner exchange, prisoner freedom, a lot of things. But yeah, if you look at the inclination scale,
you can see the contrast.
A little bit of,
you can see, can really see the contrast. And that's a wrap for today, everyone. Thank you so much for tuning into the Smashy Business Show. Make sure to follow us across all social media channels at Smashy Business and stay ahead with our daily newsletter. You'll find this description link in the description. Enjoy your weekend. You deserve it.
This has been a Smashy Business Show, a Smashy Business production, part of the Augustus Media Podcast Network. A big shout out to our 1.6 million monthly listeners. Yesterday, I got an update. It's 1.6 million. As soon as we touch 2 million, we'll tell you because we'll celebrate it with you. Thank you so much if you're one of them. Keep sharing our content and keep liking it and keep commenting. Tell us what we can do better. We
love feedback. Honestly, we need feedback.
Thank you. Take care. Bye-bye.